Good evening, Lehigh Valley. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening for Lehigh Valley Discourse. And I'm hoping that you can stay tuned to us for the next hour as we have a great program for you. We're talking with Dr. Bonnie Coyle of St. Luke's University Hospital Network. And a very interesting background. She does an awful lot in our communities, and I'm sure you're going to want to hear about everything that St. Luke's is doing. But before I let Dr. Coyle speak and let her introduce herself to you, let me give you some background on St. Luke's, because we pass a lot of the campuses and the main hospital, and I don't know how many of us really understand a little bit of the history and the full scope of St. Luke's University Hospital Network. Founded in 1872, the founding was basically given to the Bethlehem clergy, entrepreneurs, and concerned citizens. They were the ones who started St. Luke's Hospital. The first patient was admitted on October 17, 1873. So that makes St. Luke's 143 years old. Wow. The three-story double brick building that was located at that time at the 400 block of Broadway, which is not too far from where we're taping and hosting the show, had 20 rooms to accommodate 8 beds and cost $8,000. The next nearest facility was 50 miles away, and you consider the road systems and transportation 143 years ago, that was probably by pony. Today, St. Luke's University Health Network has grown into a regional, fully integrated, nationally recognized network providing services at 7 hospitals and more than 200 sites, primarily in the counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Carbon, Schuylkill, Bucks, Montgomery, Berks, and Monroe. And there's also Warren County in New Jersey. And if we look at the numbers, because at year end we always look at numbers, there are 7 campuses, 61,000 annual admission, 10,000 employees, 1,341 physicians representing 100 plus specialties, and 200 outpatient facilities. This has been a very interesting 143 years, yes. Dr. Coyle, hasn't it?
We have grown a bit in that time, haven't we?
I guess. Dr. Coyle, and I'm going to call her Bonnie and Dr. Coyle probably interchangeably. She's very much informal, but she has made a big impact here in the Lehigh Valley. So I would like her first to share with you a little bit of her background and how she got here to the Lehigh Valley, and then we'll go into some questions and areas of what is happening in her particular specialty. So, Dr. Coyle. Okay. Well,
thanks, Sally. Thanks for having me. I was born and raised in the Lehigh Valley in Nazareth, Pennsylvania.
So okay.
This is home, and that's what's really been fun about this job position at St. Luke's. I was gone for quite a number of years. I went to Penn State University for my undergrad. Yay.
Yay.
Go State. And then I went to medical school at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia. And to pay my way through med school, I accepted a military scholarship. So I then spent the next 4 or 5 years of my life training in the military. I went to San Diego Naval Hospital to do my internship and then spent a number of years being what's called the general medical officer. Was stationed on a ship for a while during the first Desert Storm. And and then when I finished my military service, I completed my residency at University of Maryland in preventive medicine and then a fellowship at UMDNJ in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And then wanted to come back home with family, was having children by then and wanted to be back around family. So we came back to this area, and that's when I was able to get my position at St. Luke's running the community health department, and I've been here and very happy ever since.
Well, that's been, how many years since 1997?
98, yes.
98. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've been back in the community a while, so welcome back home.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's great to have
great
you here.
To be here.
Now, you said you did your residency in preventative?
I did in preventive medicine, yes.
Okay, so was that something that was relatively new and coming on the verge when you were doing that?
It was relatively new at the time. There was quite a number of programs. It's sort of an unusual field of medicine. A lot of people don't even know that it exists, including sometimes doctors. Mm-hmm. But it is a field of medicine that trains you to think more about communities and whole populations rather than just individual patients. And it trains you to in the field of public health. So how do we keep people healthy as well as helping them return to health when they are sick? And again, looking at it more from communities and populations, like what are the health problems that affect our community? And then how can we make changes so that we can help people be healthier?
So it's more of a, I'm going to say, a holistic approach to looking at the community's impact on our health versus the individual's behavior, although that certainly is extremely important. But
right, and it will include the behavior of individuals. But yeah, a lot very data oriented. So we'll look at, you know, what's the prevalence of diabetes in a community or heart disease, and then what might be impacting that, and then how can we make environmental and social changes or create programs to just help people move towards a healthier lifestyle.
Okay, so when you started back in 1998, was there a preventive health care discipline within St. Luke's, or were you the sort of the founding individual?
Well, you know, our CEO, who still is with our network today, Rick Anderson, at that time himself had a master's in public health degree, and so he was always very focused on community and public health too. Okay. And so he was probably a real pioneer in that he decided he wanted St. Luke's to have a community health department. He wanted us to be focused on always giving back to the community, thinking about what are the needs of the community. So he started that community health department a couple of years before I came back to the area. And then when I came back, they were looking for someone to lead it. So it was relatively new. Many hospitals did not at that time have a community health department. And even to this day, some hospitals still are only starting to think about community health and preventive medicine, but it is growing.
Wow. Well, I would think, I mean, with the way that the population has grown, especially here in the Lehigh Valley, that there's a lot of areas that you've been touching, especially since the hospital has grown, too, beyond the Lehigh Valley.
Absolutely. When I started, we were just St. Luke's Bethlehem campus. Uh-huh. And since then, as you've already said, we're up to 7 campuses covering the greater eastern Pennsylvania area. And so we have a lot more populations
territory
and community to cover, and health issues are different in certain in rural communities versus in our cities. So it requires a little bit of a, you know, tweaking as we think about how we help communities depending on which part of Pennsylvania we're addressing, or Jersey for that matter, since we are now in New Jersey too.
So can, just so our listeners have an idea of the types of programs that you get, I don't want you to go through a whole list, but in the Lehigh Valley, what are one or two major programs? And we might get into more detail a little bit later, but what would people recognize as being part of the outreach or part of the auspices of your program?
Probably the program that's most visible that people may have seen is our mobile medical and dental van program. These are very large Winnebago-sized vans that are driving around the valley to schools in Allentown and Bethlehem and in New Jersey and up in Bangor and up by Miners Campus and Quakertown. So we try to take the vans to all of the campuses where we all the campuses. And these vans travel to the schools and provide healthcare services to the children at those schools, either medical services or dental care, vision programs to help kids get glasses who might not be able to afford them, and mental health services. So, and those are, again, throughout the valley and working with kids at those schools who are struggling to connect.
And the various school districts, I'm sure, are excited to have you there because having just a school nurse anymore is not sufficient.
Exactly. It's a real partnership. We really work very closely with the school to identify the kids who need care and then get them connected to services. So it's a fun program. We also do school gardens with the schools in partnership with Kellen Foundation. And so we help set up gardens at the schools and do healthy living programs. We're starting to dabble with yoga and meditation as a way of helping kids at those schools too.
Wow. Boy, it's really growing from, you know, early times.
Yes.
That's fantastic. One of the things that has happened with the Obama administration is the Affordable Care Act. And as we were talking before the show, there's been some impact on preventive health and what you're doing, obviously.
Yeah.
So let's talk about how that has sort of aided, maybe projected, the community health program and its direction?
Sure. So again, we've had our community health department since the mid-1990s, and we've been doing needs assessments and planning around our programs. But the Affordable Care Act really brought that to the forefront for all hospitals, requiring any nonprofit hospital to do a community health needs assessment in any community that they have a hospital in. So we, St. Luke's, are now required to do a community health needs assessment at all seven of our campuses, and then develop programs and plans to implement that address the health needs that we identify as a result of those community health needs assessments. So while we've been committed to that since I've been with the program, it's really made it even more important and more out there in the front of things to be conducting these needs assessments. The Affordable Care Act is also requiring hospitals and physicians to really focus on value-based care. And so specifically looking at reducing costs, improving quality, and improving the patient experience. And there are all kinds of initiatives and mandates that are being put into effect that are having hospitals rethink how they do healthcare. And that's also been a big impact on my area and our programs.
And so those hospitals that weren't as didn't have the foresight that St. Luke's did, didn't really have a base to start with when they were starting to do this data and needs assessment, correct? Yeah. So you already had something to begin to work with and grow from there.
Yeah.
How often do you have to do a needs assessment?
We have to do them every 3 years. Yeah, and that comes around very quickly because we use a very comprehensive approach. We collect data that exists already. We pull that all together. We conduct community focus groups where we bring together community leaders and ask them what they're seeing in here in the Lehigh Valley. And then we go out and talk to the residents and have them fill out surveys for us and tell us how their health has been, what they think about healthcare. So that whole process takes us about 18 months to work through. And then till you sit down, analyze everything, come up with your plans, you're working round the clock on getting that accomplished.
So when you're under that 18 months of needs assessment, you're still doing programs from the last one.
Right.
So you're doing the double duty then.
Yes. That's what keeps us very busy because we're also implementing the programs from the last cycle and looking to make changes while we're also working on the next cycle.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot of work. Now, you had mentioned value-based and value-based care and how it's redefining the healthcare industry. Does this also mean that there's more of a team approach from the provider perspective?
Yes.
Because it had seemed like silos for such a long time.
It really does, and I certainly see that with the meetings I'm attending. We're really taking this team approach, both at the hospital level and at the physician level. So docs who used to be who are in private practice, they would pretty much always be sort of, the leader of their team, and they would just operate on their own. Now they're really requiring they have to be working with the nurses and the other staff in their office to figure out how best to help their patients and address the problems that they have. So lots of team-based care going on now.
Wow. That's terrific because, quite honestly, years ago it just seemed like one area wasn't talking to the other and one might provide direction in one area or medication in another area that another area didn't know about.
Yeah. We call it integrative care in health lingo, if you will, and where we're realizing that we can't have a cardiology department working separately from the anesthesia department, working separately from another department. We have to be integrating and working across divisions so that we're really coordinating care. There's a concept called patient-centered medical home that's evolved in the primary care field that focuses on that and recognizes that you have to bring together the doctor with dietitians and social workers and financial counselors, all working as a team so that you can identify, again, what's going to really best help each and every patient and help them be healthier.
That's a lot of coordination.
It is a lot of coordination.
Well,
but it's what needs to happen if we're really going to make a difference in our health care.
And so what's helping that to happen, obviously, is technology.
Yes.
Because I know now when I go to a referred physician for whatever, yes. they already have all my records. They
right.
already have access yes. to everything.
Right. So electronic health records have really made this value-based care possible in a way that was not possible before they came out. Because, you know, a patient would come to one doctor and that doctor didn't know what the previous doctor had done. Mm-hmm. Now we can access through electronic health records. We can look at anything the patient has had done in the system. So any other doctors they've seen, any labs, any x-rays, that's all immediately available to the doctor they're with right now so that doctor can make better, more informed decisions about what's going to help the patient.
Okay, now I'm going to ask a trick question here maybe. And I'm sorry to do this to you, Bonnie, but because we have such strong medical systems here in the Valley between St. Luke's and mm-hmm. Lehigh Valley Hospital, is that technology shared among the two hospitals? Is that something that's going to have to happen?
It will very soon be able to happen. St. Luke's is currently switching to an electronic health record called Epic,
okay.
which is also the record that Lehigh Valley Hospital uses.
Okay.
So there is more and more of a push at the state and national level to have systems communicate with each other, even across health systems, so that we can look up, you know, somebody was seen in an emergency room at Lehigh Valley Hospital, and now they're at St. Luke's, that
right.
we know what happened there. And that's really going to be helpful. We've started doing some of that with this, with some of the schools. The schools are able to access, you know, immunization records and some basic services that are provided by the hospitals locally too. And I think that's really valuable and really going to help healthcare advance and not be so fragmented.
Right, because I mean, depending upon where you are and what the episode is and all that kind of stuff could lead you to one direction and maybe not the healthcare system that you normally go to.
Exactly.
So, yeah, very, very yeah. important. Okay, now, as a part of, I think, the Affordable Health Care Act, ACA, there's a shared savings program. Is that a part
yes.
of ACA?
Right. So one of the things the Affordable Care Act is setting up is these what they're called alternative payment systems. So right up until now, healthcare has essentially been paid for just as fee for service. You have a problem, you go see a doctor, the doctor charges you for that care, or the hospital charges you for that care, and that's it. Now, with this, the Affordable Care Act recognizing that we have to focus on quality and cost and patient experience, what they're doing is creating shared savings programs as one option where insurance companies, so Medicare or a private insurance company, will actually partner with a healthcare system and say, if we can take care of a population like the Lehigh Valley or, you know, some other area, and we can make them healthier for less cost, we're going to take the money that was saved and share it amongst the healthcare system and the insurance companies so that they can put that money back into additional programs and services that will help us provide even better healthcare. So the focus of shared savings programs is to get the cost of healthcare under control at the same time that we're improving the quality of those services.
Wow. That's really an amazing concept. And do we see this working? Has it had a
yes.
benefit yet?
There have been quite a lot of pilot projects, and now they're expanding because the initial pilot projects over the past couple of years have demonstrated that you really can improve your quality, make people healthier, get them connected to more services, while also lowering the cost of care. So that's become a very attractive model for, at the national level, for us to be able to get healthcare costs under control. That we are one of the most expensive countries in the world for the health care that we have. So
right.
while we provide good health care, the problem is it's so expensive, it's pricing some folks out of the ability to afford it.
Correct.
And so we do need to take some steps to get that under control.
Well, and if there's the incentive to get some savings money back
mm-hmm.
from doing it, I mean,
right.
that's all the better. Wow. Listeners, we're going to take a short break. I'm here with Dr. Bonnie Coyle, who is the director of the community health for St. Luke's University Hospital Network. And this is Sally Hanlon. We'll be back with you shortly. Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Sally Hanlon, your host this evening, and we're talking to Dr. Bonnie Coyle, who is the director of the Community Health Program for St. Luke's University Health Network. And in the first part, if you were listening, we were talking about some of the important features of the Affordable Care Act, ACA, that has made us have, I guess, a better integrated approach and a sort of a savings approach to our care. But we also have an administration that's changing.
Yes.
So, and there's been a lot of talk about the Affordable Care Act and everything. So, and I realize that I'm asking you this sort of off the cuff, and this is, you know, your opinion. But how do you see that sort of playing through right now, Bonnie?
Well, I think a lot of people think when they hear the term Affordable Care Act, they only think about Obamacare or the insurance exchanges. So one of the tenets of the Affordable Care Act was to create insurance coverage for individuals who do not have insurance. Mm-hmm. And so what we did was create these health exchanges, and folks can then go into them and select insurance products and be covered with their for insurance care. That is when the Trump administration has said that they will repeal Obamacare. That generally is what they are referring to, as those health exchanges. But in fact, and this is the part a lot of folks don't realize, is that there are many, many other aspects of the whole Affordable Care Act legislation that were passed that have that deal with things other than just that insurance coverage. There is, you know, there were funds that were allocated for a focus on prevention. There are funds that are allocated for value-based care initiatives to have Medicare rethink and revamp how they are organizing the payment for healthcare services so that we are focusing on quality and cost and patient experience. And most folks who are very familiar with the Affordable Care Act and have been working in the healthcare sector for the past 6 years that the Affordable Care Act has been in place are pretty confident that most of that work is going to stay in place. So there's still going to be the focus on the value-based care and how do we lower costs, improve quality, and improve the patient experience.
Well, that's good to hear, because I think, as you said, most people, all we hear about is the insurance exchange.
Exactly.
And who's supporting it from an insurance company and who's pulling out. And so that makes the headlines. This other information does not.
Right. I think it's what's most relevant to the average American is they want to make sure they have health care coverage. And so that's the part that everybody understands occurred with the Affordable Care Act.
And I can't believe it's been in place 6 years now. Wow, 6 years has gone
fast. It does go fast, doesn't it?
You had initially talked about the fact that St. Luke's has been doing marketplace needs analysis and needs assessments for quite a while, and obviously this is something also under the umbrella of the Affordable Care Act. What have become the priorities for you and the community health program here at St. Luke's University Health Network?
Yeah, our needs assessments have identified several health issues that we've really been focused on. And first is what I would say is like healthy living or chronic disease prevention. So here in the Valley and across all the areas where St. Luke's has campuses, we most residents are not eating well. They aren't eating enough healthy foods. They're eating too much of the, you know, fast food and high-fat foods. And as a result, we're seeing a lot of people who are overweight or obese or developing chronic diseases like diabetes and heart disease and cancer as a result. And so that's one of the areas within healthy living that we're focused on. The other is the sort of partner to that, the lack of exercise. So we are not moving enough. Bodies are meant to be moving. We're supposed to be active. You know, sitting is actually dangerous to our health, and we do a little too much sitting. And so we have are developing lots of programs to try to get people moving more. Along with that, then we have a lot of high rates of chronic diseases. Diabetes is probably one of the most important health issues we're seeing locally. Our rates are higher than national averages, especially amongst certain populations like African-American and Latino populations, but in general, a problem. And diabetes is a very significant health problem that can take its toll both in terms of how long you live and the quality of the years that you're living. And so we're very focused on trying to make sure we're preventing diabetes and then helping people with diabetes get it under better control.
And it's sort of one of those silent chronic diseases because it sort of catches you by surprise, but it's been building over years.
It really does. You can have diabetes for a number of years and not really have symptoms. And so it's slowly creating more and more health problems in your body and you don't even know. So one of our pushes is getting folks to make sure they get screened for diabetes and learn earlier in the stages that they may have the disease so that they can
change it. And diet and exercise can absolutely change that.
Oh, yes. The best treatment for diabetes and the best prevention for diabetes is diet and exercise.
Okay, so the screening, is the screening basically a blood test?
Yes, it's a simple, what we call fasting blood test. So you need to fast overnight, so about 12 hours, and then you check a sugar level, blood glucose. So a simple test. Or another way is with a hemoglobin A1C test, which is also a blood test.
Okay, so it's a very easy test to get done.
It's a very easy test.
Interesting. All right. And do you get results right away?
You can get results within a day or two.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's really great. Now, you had mentioned lack of exercise being another one. I know that you've been involved in getting with Delaware Lehigh
yes.
National Heritage Corridor.
Yes.
Okay. And there are some other programs that you have been involved with. Can you share that with our listeners?
Sure. Yeah. The DNL Heritage Corridor approached us quite a number of years ago now, right after we had finished our first cycle under the Affordable Care Act of needs assessments. And they were very interested in partnering with us, St. Luke's Network, on an initiative to get folks out and active on their trails or just anywhere really in the valley. And we had just identified that we really needed to get opportunities out there for people to be more active. So we thought that was a wonderful opportunity to partner up with them on this program. So we developed a project we call Get Your Tail on the Trail.
I love
with
that.
Them.
I love that.
And so the DNL trail is 165 miles long. So our challenge became for people in the Lehigh Valley to just get out and during a six-month cycle, so from May through the end of October each year, to get out and walk, run, or bike 165 miles during that time. Didn't have to do the whole trail. You could bike the same stretch, you know, every week, or you could try to do the whole thing. But just get out and get active. You didn't have to be on the trail. Just get out. Get away from the couch, get away from the television, get out, be active. And if you hit the milestones of getting that activity, we give prizes to people for hitting certain milestones. When you hit the 50 miles, 100 miles, and then if you do the whole 165 miles, you would get a prize. And our prizes would tend to be fitness-oriented, like water bottles and fleece jackets and things like that.
To support that habit.
To support the habit, yes.
Interesting. So how do people track that? Is it just a honor system or what?
So we have a website, tailonthetrail.org, that you can go to, and then there's a tracking process there. So you log your miles. So if you went out today and you hiked 5 miles, you would go in, you'd put the date, you'd put the 5 miles. So it's a little bit of on your honor. It's not right. Like we're out there watching you, making sure you're doing it. But just you track the miles, and then as you hit your milestones, then we award you the prizes and gifts. And it's been really successful. We've had over 5,000-6,000 people register over the years and participate in this program. We just finished our spring-fall session. We do a six-month session between May and October each year, and then we do a mini winter challenge because, boy, it gets hard to get out and be active when it gets cold.
Yes,
we all just kind of want to, you know, huddle
snuggle
up in our house.
And it gets dark. You don't want to be out in the dark.
Yeah. So we do a little mini challenge during February where we we say, just get out and do 30 miles, you know, or get on a treadmill in your house and do 30, or go to the gym and on the treadmill and do 30 miles. But over the course of 1 month, do that 30 miles, and then we'll give you a little bit of a prize too. So over the years, we've had thousands of people join in and start getting active. And we have a Facebook page that people can follow on, and we've asked them to take pictures of the funnest place they've hiked, biked, or run, and post it on our Facebook page and talk about their experience. So we've had Get Your Tail on the Trail gear photographed all across our country and even in other countries. So it's been fun watching everybody, you know, really get creative with their efforts.
Interesting. And have you had any sort of aha moments that are shared with you from some of the folks who have taken the challenge and really noticed a change in their lifestyle or their health? Or do you get any feedback like that?
Absolutely. We try to highlight those folks sometimes on our websites or in our various social media. We've had so many people tell us that we had this one mom's club who, a group of women who were always sitting around at the school waiting for their kids' sports events to be over, and they decided to create a club and start walking as part of Tail on the Trail. And a number of them now have even advanced to where they're doing mini marathons and that, and they had all been couch potatoes, and they shared that experience with us, which was really fun. And we've had a number of people share with us that they, as a result of getting out and walking or biking, that they've lost a significant amount of weight, and several of them cured their diabetes as a result or got it under control.
That's great.
And so we love hearing those stories, and we always want to hear more about them, because it does show the power of good eating and physical activity to really be able to make you much healthier.
Okay. And I noticed, or at least in part of our discussion that we had talked about, more of the groups that are happening now in the workplace, that you're doing some workplace efforts as well?
Absolutely. So one of the things that has come out of the Affordable Care Act to some degree too is that if you're thinking about trying to make people healthier and lower costs, certainly hospitals should be the leaders and be thinking about working with their own employees and making our employees as healthy as possible. So St. Luke's has been very committed to an employee wellness program for a number of years now. And every year we ask our employees to complete a health risk assessment and have some labs drawn and answer some questions. And then we work with them if they have health problems to try to get them under control and offer programs to get them healthier. We've been working very intently on changing the food that we're serving in our cafeterias to make it healthier food. Mm-hmm. And one initiative that I'm very excited about that we have is an organic garden that we've started out at our Anderson campus, where we're partnering with Rodale Institute and have many acres dedicated to growing fresh organic produce that we then use not only at the Anderson campus but at every cafeteria through our network, so that we are incorporating locally grown organic foods into all of the food that we are serving our employees and our patients.
That's got to be quite an operation with 7 campuses and
It is. We have a system where we, you know, when the produce is harvested, it's then transported to each of the campuses, and, you know, setting up of the menus so that we're using it while it's still fresh. We have much of it in our salad bars, and we lowered the cost of the salad bar because we wanted more people to start eating salads. And we, as a result of doing that, we noticed that the salad bar consumption went up pretty significantly. So we're looking at opportunities like that to encourage people to be adopting healthier diets and to both prevent and treat their diseases.
Do you anticipate that this experience that you've had as a corporate employer, will you be taking that to other employers? Or how will you be leveraging this somehow?
We would certainly like to start to do that, because, if we're really going to get healthcare costs under control and help people be healthier, we have to start with this prevention side of things. And we really want to take what we've learned. We are really seeing some solid improvements in our employees' health. We every year we see less diabetes, we see improved cholesterol, we're seeing weight loss, we're seeing that we're making a difference. And if we start taking that message and working with other employers in our communities, what a great way to make our whole Lehigh Valley and surrounding communities healthier.
Yeah. And one of the areas that I always, and you and I talked about this, I don't want to go into a whole lot of detail, but in some of our public service areas where people put their lives on the line, having a healthy focus is extremely important.
Absolutely. You really have to be fit to work in some of those areas. And eating well just helps you, keeps your stamina up and makes you more mentally alert, too, to be able to
do that.
Function in whatever job you have.
I don't remember how long ago this was, but I remember how sort of shocked we all were when St. Louis came out and had a no-smoking policy.
Mm-hmm,
that they wouldn't hire people who were smokers. Yeah. And was that like 6 years ago? Was that at the beginning of the
I think it was at least six years ago. I think it was about 2008, 2009. And, you know, that was viewed as a little controversial at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, our message is we are a healthcare institution. We are taking care of people who are ill in many, many times because of the smoking. And so as a healthcare system and as healthcare employees, we need to be setting the example and demonstrating positive health behaviors. And so it was really meant to encourage that healthy living and that we wanted our workers to be the role models for our patients.
Yeah. Yeah. And nothing, my sister was at the Cleveland Clinic years ago, and it used to amaze me the number of people that were there for, you know, cardiac surgery or whatever, and then you'd see them go outside and smoke. It was like, okay, all right.
Well, tobacco is the number one cause of death and disability in our country, and then followed by poor diet and lack of exercise.
Right.
And it's projected that in the next couple of years, diet and exercise are going to overtake tobacco.
Oh, really?
Yes. But so there's the top three things we have within our own control to manage, and we would eliminate significant amounts of disease and suffering if we could just help folks manage those three behaviors.
Okay, so you had said chronic disease and lack of exercise. So those three things that you just mentioned, diet, exercise, and tobacco, fall within...
That's all one issue.
Within that.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And you had also mentioned at one point that there's a walk with the docs.
Yes. Yes, we love this program. It's called Walk with a Doc. It's a national program that was developed by a cardiologist named Dr. Sagir out in the Midwest. What it does is encourage, again, it's an activity to encourage people to get out and moving. And so at least once a month on a Saturday morning, second Saturday of the month, we hold a walk that is led by a doctor from our St. Luke's network. And the community is encouraged to come out and join that doctor and walk along with him or her, and they ask questions. It's a wonderful way for patients to spend some sort of informal and fun time with the doctors in our network rather than that more formal or scary. The white coat appointment kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And get to see docs as, you know, the real fun people that they are. And so every month we lead a walk and we want the community to come out. And another way of having folks think about walking is one of the best exercises. You don't have to go to a gym and get all sweaty or, you know, lift a lot of weight or, you know, run marathons. Just walking every day, 30 minutes every day, will do tremendous things for your health. So that's the message we're trying to get out with that program.
Okay. Listeners, we're going to be taking a short break. And again, you are listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Sally Hanlon, your host this evening. And we are talking with Dr. Bonnie Coyle of St. Luke's University Health Network's Preventive Care Community Health Area. So stay tuned. There's more to come. Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Sally Hanlon, your host this evening, and I'm talking to Dr. Bonnie Coyle of St. Luke's University Health Network's Community Health Program. And we've been talking about all sorts of topics. Right before this break, we were talking about a neat program where you can walk with your doctor. It happens every second Saturday of the month.
So our next walk is January 14th at Saturday morning at 9 a.m. at the Palmer Park Mall. And we move the location every month so that we're kind of moving it around the valley so folks can come out and join in. We're doing it inside during the winter months so that folks, you know, in case we have bad weather or we don't want anybody falling. So we'll be inside for a month or two and then we get back outside and out on trails and fun places. So we move that around a little bit. But the format is that we everyone arrives and then the doctors, we usually have two docs that lead the walks. They will speak for very briefly, 3 or 4 minutes, and talk about a program that they might have or about a healthy habit that folks may want to think about. And then walk for about 30 minutes. And then you come back and anybody who might want to get their blood pressure checked can get their blood pressure checked. We have a healthy snack. And then there's more sort of, you know, informal talking with the docs if anybody wants to continue to ask questions. So the whole thing is about 45 minutes to an hour long at most. But again, a fun way of getting folks out, meeting others, meeting the docs, and getting any questions they may have answered.
Where would people find where you're going to be each month?
So you can go to our St. Luke's website, slhn.org, and access the calendar for that. The Walk with a Doc National website also has us listed.
Oh, okay.
You can access all of our walks there and see when they are. Or you can call our department and we can help. Our number is 484-526-2100.
We were talking about some of the efforts, the collaborative efforts, and certainly the Organic Doc Garden and Tail on the Trail and Walk with the Docs is part of that. But you also work collaboratively with United Way, colleges, et cetera,
yes.
Correct?
Yes, that's really our motto. We don't want to just be St. Luke's doing these programs. We really see value and impact when we work collectively with other organizations. It's just, you know, you can do so much more together than you can alone. So we really look in all of our initiatives to partner with others. So the United Way, they have a wonderful initiative called the Community Schools Initiative that we work with them on, and we call our piece of it the Adopt-a-School model. So the community school model the United Way supports is to have coordinators at schools that are not doing as well in terms of school performance and where the health of the community is more at risk. And again, create this whole network of community partners to put programs and services at that school to help the kids succeed, do well in school, and also to access healthcare services and any other social services they might need. We have been very active with them in supporting the health side of those services. That's where we bring our mobile vans, our mental health services, our vision program, and then some of our healthy living programs. We also do literacy initiatives through those Adopt-a-School programs. You know, research has shown that if a child is not reading at grade level by third grade, they're generally just not going to catch up. They may not end up graduating, and then they're going to have difficulty succeeding in life.
Yeah.
So we're very focused on working with local elementary schools on a number of literacy initiatives. One we call Reading Rocks, where we partner with Lehigh University and other colleges for the athletes and students at those colleges to come into the schools, other community volunteers too, and work with kids who are struggling to read. One-to-one, you know, once a week for an hour or so, helping them, reading with them, encouraging them to read, helping them build their skills. Mm-hmm. And then we give the children prizes for improving. And we found that program is really helping some kids. You know, they're getting a mentor. They, you know, our elementary kids think it is so cool when they have a college student that's
Absolutely.
Hanging out with them
and
emphasizing to them how important it is to focus on their studies and their academics and learning to read. We also support Dr. Seuss Day, which is in early March, Read Across America, where we, St. Luke's volunteers, we partner with the colleges and other organizations and go into the schools and read with the kids in all grade levels, encouraging them to understand how important it is to get a good education and be able to be successful.
Do you wear a red and white hat?
We've the past couple of years, we've bought these fun, crazy hats and given them to the readers, and we've told the readers to wear crazy socks. We try to turn it into a really fun day. And again, the students just get so excited that, you know, St. Luke's, our trauma docs and trauma department has gone in and helped, and a whole number of other doctors and the nurses and that. And the students just get so excited because they're so happy that, you know, doctors and nurses and that are coming out to hang out with them for a day and help them.
While we're talking about the colleges helping out, Lehigh University just recently announced in the paper that they're going to be expanding with the addition of a new health college. Do you know anything more about that?
I don't have all the details on what the specific focus is going to be, but they have certainly been focusing on a minor and development of a major called Health, Medicine, and Society, which has been very community health, public health focused. They feel very confident that that is going to be part of this overall health initiative, and that's very exciting to me because, again, when I started in this field in preventive medicine, there just wasn't a lot of focus on public and community health. And in the 20 years I've been in the Valley, most of the colleges have started either a major or a minor in a public or community health-related field, Lehigh being one of them. And I think that that is such a smart and important move because, again, our country has to get more focused on community health prevention if we're going to start to make a difference in our healthcare field, and having new graduates gain those skills to be able to get out there and in the workforce and help us revamp our healthcare system. We've been partnering with them for quite a number of years with our Reading Rocks program. I am an adjunct professor at Lehigh. Okay. I've been teaching public health classes in their health, medicine, and society minor for the past 6 years. We've developed a health equity internship for students there in partnership with the Hispanic Center, St. Luke's, and Lehigh. And we've started a really interesting program at Brockle Middle School. We call it the Hearts Clinic. It's a free care clinic for uninsured individuals. And Lehigh pre-med students are trained to be health leads, mentors. So they're interested in going into medical school, and we're teaching them how to focus on what we call the social determinants of health. So how are you going to help somebody who's uninsured get connected to insurance or get connected to the care they need when they don't have the ability to pay for it? And they learn all about those social issues that impact and the programs that are available. And they're working alongside of our St. Luke's Temple medical students who created this program, organized it and developed it.
Yeah.
And then our faculty, our attending physicians, come there and mentor and coach the medical students and the undergraduate students. We have dietitians there and social workers and other staff from St. Luke's. So again, we're using that creative, collaborative, integrated approach of, you know, how do we bring together a team to care for folks who are really going to have difficulty accessing care. And what's so great about it is we're training the future healthcare providers to think in that model from an earlier age.
Yeah, an inclusive, broader model than they've had in the past where it's been specialty silos.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Now, I have to ask, do all of these things we've been talking about come under your umbrella with community health?
They do. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Whoa.
It's fun work.
I guess it's all the time.
It is. It's all the time, but it's fun work and it's rewarding. You know, when you hear the story about somebody who, you know, cured themselves of their diabetes, or when we connect somebody who was uninsured to the care and the services that they need, and it's just really rewarding.
Wow. Before we move on to a couple other questions that I had, I wanted to get back to you to the analysis that you've done. Yeah. And we talked a little bit about chronic disease being one of the major areas, but there's other components of your strategy or your priorities.
Yeah, the two other main issues that have come up as health priorities are what I call access to care and health disparities, and then mental health. Okay. So what I mean by access to care and health disparities is when you look at how healthy our community is, overwhelmingly, folks who are lower income or are minority populations have worse health. They die younger, sometimes as much as 7 to 12 years younger, and they are much more sick while they're alive. And a lot of that has to do with income, education level, poverty. And many people don't realize this. Poverty is one of the biggest predictors of health status. You know, when you don't have access to the funds that allow you to put good food on the table and to buy your medications, and that your health is going to suffer. Mm-hmm. So we focus very strongly on initiatives that improve access to care and are looking at reducing health disparities. So we have a large HIV program to help folks who have HIV disease access the care they need and get connected to the services. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We have maternal and child health programs that are nurse home visiting programs. So moms who are newly pregnant and may really need a lot of education and help navigating our healthcare system and making sure they're getting the care that they need, they get a nurse health coach for 2 years, all through the pregnancy and up through the first 2 years of life, help making sure they have a healthy pregnancy and then that they are learning the best parenting techniques possible so that their baby develops and is developmentally on track.
Yeah.
And then we have clinics throughout all of our campuses that provide care to folks who may have Medicaid insurance or who are uninsured so that we're getting folks connected to care no matter what their problems are with being able to access that care. And then we develop specific programs when we recognize that many folks may have difficulty accessing care. So for like women who need mammograms, we have programs that help get them connected if they don't have insurance. We're currently working on developing programs to help people get connected to colonoscopies because colon cancer is such a problem in our local area. We have high rates, and unfortunately, we have high death rates. Colon cancer is completely preventable and curable if you get tested early and regularly. And yet, it's one of the least adhered to screening programs. And so we're trying to get awareness raised out there that if you get a colonoscopy or get a FIT test, which checks your stool for blood, early and we find colon cancer, we can cure it.
Yeah.
It's curable in its early stages. It's when we ignore the signs and symptoms and it gets more advanced that it's a whole lot more difficult to cure.
Yeah, wow. Is our level of prostate cancer high too in the Valley? Because I see billboards and things for that.
Yeah, prostate cancer is one of the most common cancers in our country. Lung cancer, breast, prostate, and colon cancer are the most common cancers across the country and also here locally.
Okay. All right. And you had mentioned that mental health was another area.
Yeah. Behavior. And this is a problem across all communities, across all, you know, education levels, income levels. We're really seeing more and more problems with people having mental health issues, from anxiety and depression to just overall stress levels, and then the more serious problems. And so we are very committed at St. Luke's to developing programs that get folks connected to the counseling services they need. We've been partnering with a number of local community agencies, Pine Brook Family Answers and Lehigh University. We've created a community voices program that provides free counseling to folks who are uninsured. But we're also looking at, you know, how do we, again, prevent these problems? Mm-hmm. So we're looking at resiliency programs, and the research is showing that meditation and yoga programs, things like that, really help people learn how to cope and manage the stress that is in their life. So we're looking at working with our own employees and providing those kinds of programs. And also, as I said, we've been working with some of our local schools. Mm-hmm. Research has shown that when you get kids involved in yoga, suspensions and detentions go down and kids start doing better in school
because
you're teaching them how to cope with the stresses that we all have to face.
Wow. I can't, you know, if there's any more beyond those three, I don't know how you get through the year. This is incredible. Wow. We just have a few minutes left, okay. Bonnie. Let's talk about some of the upcoming programs, okay. And then if there's a few minutes left, we'll talk about your research.
Okay. Yeah, so I already mentioned our Walk with a Doc program. One more plug, January 14th is our next walk. We'd love to have lots more people coming out. I also briefly mentioned our Tail on the Trail mini winter challenge. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That will be during the month of February. The kickoff date is usually right off the bat on February 1st or 2nd, but I encourage everyone to check our St. Luke's website to get details for that and to join us in getting a little bit more active during the cold winter months. The other program that I really would love to let people know about is our diabetes education program. We have a program that we can work with folks who are both pre-diabetic, so that means their blood sugar levels are getting higher, but not so high that they have diabetes. We have an education program to work with them to get that under control and prevent them from developing diabetes. And then we also have a diabetes program that works with folks who already have diabetes and are struggling to get their blood sugars under control.
For those that want to go on the website is?
SLHN.org. Okay. Or just search on St. Luke's. That's a great way to get to it, too.
Okay, and the phone number if they can't find it or they would prefer to talk to somebody?
So the Community Health and Preventive Medicine Department phone number is 484-526-2100. So anybody who's interested in learning more about the programs or has a question about something they didn't hear us talk about today, I welcome the call so that we can help them get on their road to a healthier life.
Thank you, Dr. Coyle, for having the time to spend with Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY.